This is Counterculture with Marie Buskey, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. on Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back to Counterculture with Marie on Reality Check Radio. It is hard to avoid any news on the US election, which will take place next week between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump. It is an election that in many ways is more important than what transpires here at home. The leader of the US sets a stage for the Western Hemisphere in not only diplomacy, but industry, finance, and culture. I've been keenly following American politics for more than 30 years, and I've never witnessed anything like I have in this campaign. So I thought I would give you all a primer into next week's event, and I've pulled together a compilation of recent interviews around the topic of the US election. First up is Cam Slater, political journalist and observer par excellence. And we did an interview several months ago as a US election 101, how their system works, polling, and what our predictions were at that time. At the time of recording, Biden had just dropped out of the race, Harris was the presumptive nominee, and RFK Jr. was still running as an independent. Here's what Cam had to say. Let's start right back at the beginning in terms of how they pull the process together. Because they are a federalized system with states, in their election, most people probably realize that they have two rounds of electorates. We're just going to look at Senate and the House of Representatives. You have states run by governors. Then you also have representatives like MPs, the closest thing to our MPs, in the House of Representatives.
Each state is its own country.
It is its own country, yeah.
Texas is its own country. California is its own country. That's why it's called the United States of America, right? Because they are a bunch of countries that have joined together to form a super country.
At this current election, there is not only voting for the president, but there's also voting for a certain number of representatives and a certain number of Senate seats. For a president, I don't think people realize how little power the president actually has in reality in sort of cobbling together this group of 50 countries, as it were, together under those United States. They have executive powers and executive orders that can be rolled over and only can really stay in place as long as you're the executor. It's really down to what you can get through the House of Representatives and the Senate. Now, at the moment, that is split. You've got a House of Representatives, which is currently being held by the Republicans by the squeak of their teeth, and then in the same thing in the Senate by the Democrats. That has the potential to roll over at this next election, as well as the Electoral College, which is allocations of votes given to each state proportionally based on its size.
Yep.
And of all of those, with the exception of two, which I think are Maine and Nebraska, I've got a funny thing, the other one, which do allocate their college seats proportionally, everybody else is a winner takes all.
Yep, that's right.
Yep.
So just in on the Electoral College, the way the Electoral College works, it is based largely on population. So the larger states have more electoral college votes. And the way it works is you get two votes per state that represents your senators, and then the rest is allocated on the number of representatives. So California is the largest. They have 54 electoral college votes. Texas is the next largest with 40, and Florida has 30. And there's some that have only got three.
Washington, D.C., for example.
Exactly. And, well, Washington, D.C. isn't technically a state, but they have given D.C. and D.C., you know, the District of Columbia does have some Electoral College votes. There's a total of 538 Electoral College votes, which is the name that Nate Silver created his polling company with, 538 he called it. And you need 270 to win. And that's the maths.
Yeah.
That you need.
You've heard two buzz terms. One is a bellwether state. So, Cam, explain to everybody what a bellwether state is.
It comes from farming, and a bellwether was the lead sheep, right? So the narrative is that we have bellwether electorates in New Zealand. Hamilton East is one of them. To put it into a New Zealand context, you've got bellwether states in the United States, and if they fall for one or other of the candidates, then it's likely that's heading in the right direction for that candidate to win the Electoral College.
The next one, of course, is either swing states or battleground states is the new term that I'm hearing now, because obviously it's more, you know, clickbaity. So explain to everybody what those are.
Well, those are states where it could go either way. Like, there's some states that are never going to change. Right? It'd be a miracle. California is one of them, for example. It's always Democrat. And that is an electoral college head start for a Democrat candidate of 54 votes. But then you've got states like Georgia, Florida, some of the other states that give you an indicator. Sometimes it can even be places like New Hampshire. And even though New Hampshire's only got four electoral college votes, that top right-hand corner of the United States where New Hampshire, Vermont, Maryland, Connecticut, and bordering on to New York and New Jersey, where they are, that is quite a few little votes in a very small area. And if you can get, for example, one of the first states to fall there, then you can often see a march start to happen around all of those adjoining states. So you look at those battleground states where there is a fight, and if it falls for Biden, Biden was going to fall for Biden, it didn't at the last election, then you have a good chance of being able to predict that perhaps we're going to see a Democrat result here. And same for Trump. If he starts winning places like Florida and Georgia and if he wins New Jersey, that's huge, right? Because that's usually Democrat. So if he carries that state, that's one of those indicators, those battleground states that you're going to see a result.
In 2016, which for all intents and purposes, the mainstream legacy media, they had odds on Hillary in the bag for that election. Yep. What they hadn't anticipated was the resurgence in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, to a greater or lesser extent, that Trump won. And they just didn't see it coming, because when the votes came in earlier in the night, things were, you know, it was falling as they had predicted and expected.
Yeah, and because then, they see New Jersey and New York and Delaware and Maryland and all, you know, Maine, they see all of those all falling for Clinton. And they think, okay, this is all good. But then you're right, in that Rust Belt, Wisconsin and all up there in the North, all of a sudden started falling for Trump. It was a disaster for them. They couldn't cope.
So this time around, pretty much the swing states or those battlegrounds haven't changed, with the exception of probably Florida. So Florida's one that in 2000, for anyone that remembers the great Chad incident of 2000, where they had these punch card type voting machines, it was a race between Bush and Gore. It was literally won or lost on those Chads in Florida, was it not?
Yep, and it came down to a court case in the end. It didn't matter. But this election's somewhat different, you know.
It is.
Some of the states that will be interesting to watch will be how Nevada, Arizona, and Texas fall. And you might think, why are they those three important? Well, Nevada borders up against California. California's going to go Democrat. But Nevada, that could be iffy, because there's a strong, long border there with Mexico. And the next state across, Arizona, exactly the same. It's got a border with Mexico, and it's got a massive problem at the border. And, of course, Texas with their border with Mexico. Massive immigration problems coming through that border. And those states sometimes go Democrat and are pretty strong Democrat, but the people in those states have had a gutsful of all the illegal immigration. And so you could see 56 electoral college votes in those three states. They fall for Trump.
And I haven't actually checked the numbers. I know at the midterms, when they divided up the congressional districts, California lost two or three congressional districts because so many people had left California and most of them had gone into Texas. And I think Texas might have picked up one or two.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, so there is also that dynamic as well, because that changes the makeup in the House. So therefore, if you're a president, there's a term called a lame duck president, which is when you're installed as president, but you don't control your party.
Or either House. In order to get your agenda and policy agenda through Congress and through the Senate requires really deft politics.
Well, we mentioned those swing states, those battleground states. And in this election, they will be primarily New Hampshire, Minnesota, Arizona, as you mentioned before, Nevada, Georgia, Virginia, Michigan, Nebraska, North Carolina, Maine, and Wisconsin, which is the newbie since 2016. And the biggest one of that, the big daddy of all of those, is Pennsylvania. I actually personally believe that this election literally is going to be won or lost on Pennsylvania. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's the state where Trump, they attempted to assassinate Trump. So there could be a bit of a blip in favor of Trump from in Pennsylvania. Kamala Harris has got one potential candidate for her running mate, a guy called Shapiro, who's from Pennsylvania. She's from California, so she kind of has to have somebody from the East Coast. It's kind of how it works, male, female, black, white, West Coast, East Coast, you know, Rust Belt, you know, cities, all of those sorts of things come into play. And, of course, they're being Democrats. They've got all of the identitarian groups that they've got to try and assuage and manage. And, you know, it's bizarre because you've got Kamala Harris who's trying to go for what she calls the coconut vote, which is, you know, people from the West Indies, where her father is from. But her mother's actually Indian. So she's trying to play the black card, even though she's kind of not, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, Pennsylvania could come down to that one state.
And this is where the excitement and the dynamism comes in with the American system, right? Is that when you look at the conundrum she's got, does she go with pragmatism and select someone like Shapiro, who's in that key state, and he's Jewish, so then comes with all those wealthy Jewish dollars that the Democratic Party rely on to stay afloat?
Yep.
Or does she have to concede to the rackety, noisy element of the Democratic Party, the activist wing of the Democratic Party, the Squad et al., who, of course, will hate Shapiro because he represents everything that they are opposed to, and will she select somebody that sits from that wing? But then they tend not to come with the dollars. They don't like to spend money, activists. They like to complain about everyone else having money and spending it, but they don't choose to spend it themselves. So it's a really interesting conundrum that the Democrats have painted themselves in a corner over, I think. So then that leads to the flip-flopping with the media and Kamala Harris. I mean, it's almost like they're trying to create the Jacinda effect that we had here in 2017.
Exactly what they're trying to do. And they've actually said it out loud that Kamala Harris is going to follow the footsteps of Jacinda Ardern. They've actually said that in US media. You know, this is a change shortly before the election. We'll see the same thing happen. Kamala Harris will come storming through. You know, there's the same level of intelligence too. They're both ninnies.
So do you think post-COVID, where there have been so many gaslights and people from both sides of the aisle have started seeing it and gone, really? And the Americans have seen it more than most. And then they've seen the gaslighting over the border, you know, because let's face it, she was the border czar and then she wasn't the border czar, according to the media. Do you think that voters will look at this attempt to lionize her, to get her across the line as president, and then going, no. Or they will just fall into line on partisan lines like they always do.
Well, there's a certain number of the population that believe everything the mainstream media says. There's a whole lot more of us that are more awake now to see what's going on. And it's not just the media that are gaslighting US society. It's also the tech companies. So, you know, if people were searching for attempted assassination of TR, and you put TR into Google, you didn't get any results for Trump. You got Truman, you got people with different names. So they were definitely putting their finger on the scale, tech companies. Facebook's Meta was doing the same thing. They said, oh, it's a terrible mistake.
That's the unexpected consequence, though, of 2016, isn't it? I've written this down here, Cambridge Analytica.
Yeah.
Because Trump and his campaign used Cambridge Analytica to actually help get a reach via social media that had never been done before, and they targeted the key states that they needed to target in that disaffected Rust Belt vote to get them across the line. And then once that was realised, Because, of course, let's face it, tech is renowned to being like Labour Party lovies here. They are overtly Democrat, and it was almost like they'd felt like they'd, you know, let their own side down. So do you think that this is tech's really perverted way of trying to redress what they did in 2016?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, that's the case. You know, the most of the tech companies that exist in the United States are headquartered in California. You know, California is facetiously called the Socialist Republic of California. It's a state that is in decline. They've got more and more woke as they've gone by, but it's now a city, you know, most of the cities are overrun with beggars, street people, and you've got massive poverty problems, and you've got people who are in, you know, in key industries, and a classic case of that is Elon Musk's corporations that have been formerly based in California. He's up, just picked those entire companies up and moved them to Texas. Right? He's saying, I can't do business with this state anymore. Their taxes are incredible. And the tech companies are all populated by, you know, weirdos and freaks that parading around dressed as donkeys or giraffes or whatever they've chosen to be their gender, and they're putting their finger on the scale. But people are aware of it. I mean, we're seeing now in real time, and we can thank Elon Musk for this, ironically, and that he's freed up Twitter or X as a platform, and so now people are getting their news from there because they don't trust the mainstream media anymore because they know they lie. They don't trust the tech companies because they know they lie, but they do know that Elon Musk stands up for free speech, that things aren't getting censored on X. And you can see real-time analysis happening from people like Tucker Carlson, who's got many, many, many millions more of an audience than he ever had at Fox News. Tech can be used both ways. I mean, they theoretically should be neutral, but they're not. Facebook especially and Google. They're putting the finger on the scale in the United States while keeping their money offshore. So can you trust them?
For listeners now who think, oh, okay, there's a lot more nuance going on there than just sort of people casting votes. Where do you think, so what are you seeing? I'm seeing Pennsylvania. What are you looking at and what will you be keeping your eye on? What are your predictions?
You know, a lot of people discount the polls. They say, oh, no, they lie. But they give you an indication, right? So I have a number of places that I go to look to get information. On my website, The Good Oil, I have a newsletter each day, weekday, that goes out that I send to my, you know, VIP customers. And I send them a selection of information that's across the political spectrum. So I look at websites like The Liberal Patriot, strong Democratic focus, but they're sane. Again, that's on Substack. Search The Liberal Patriot, you'll find it. In terms of polling, there's a couple of sites I look at. First one is Real Clear Politics. They're neither left nor right, and they're essentially an aggregator site, but they collate polls and run what they call the RCP averages, and that gives you an indication there as well. But the main person I follow is Nate Silver. He's got a track record. The guy is an absolute genius. His full-time job is actually playing poker professionally. So he understands odds and betting and all of those sorts of things. He started off doing statistics for baseball and football. And then he thought, well, hang on, I can build a model for politics. And then he got into political prediction modeling and things like that. So whilst he's running models, he's usually based on reality. And he used to work for 538. And he left 538 because they were putting their finger on the scale when it came to the models. And he was against that. So he left and he set it up as he's gone out on his own again. And he's, you know, built a new election model. You know, last week on Friday, he changed from the presidential election as Trump's to lose to being a toss up because that's what he's seen in the space of a week. That the polling is changing, which is affecting the modelling. But again, he puts an asterisk on that and says, until Kamala Harris is the actual nominee, then it's moot. It's a rolling feast. But he's worth watching because he explains in easy-to-understand language how his models work.
That was Cam Slater from The Good Oil, and as discussed, the fundamentals of the US election coming up, and you know Cam, he'll be watching this election like an absolute hawk over the coming days. Next up is Trevor Loudon. Trevor is a Florida-based Kiwi writer and political commentator, specialising in communism and modern politics. Here's a grab from our latest conversation a month or so ago after Kamala had been given the nomination, but just before RFK joined the Trump campaign. Good morning and welcome back to Counterculture here with Marie. Joining me now all the way from Florida, Trevor Loudon, commentator, writer, and of course, great friend of the show. How are you, Trevor?
I'm great, Marie. Thanks for having me on, and regards to all the listeners.
So good to have you back, and what are we, 40-ish days out from fun and games? Have you got your popcorn ready, the cold beverages in the esky? Are you ready to go for the 5th of November?
I think more people are worried about not so much popcorn, but ammunition and food supplies and generators and things to, you know, to survive a period of turmoil. I think that's what more of us are. Well, more people I know are focused on that than popcorn, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Is there actually a genuine concern amongst conservatives that there will be a Democratic backlash if Donald Trump were to win?
Oh, very much so. A lot of us are expecting violence on the street this month. If not, when Trump wins, we definitely expect violence and disruption and chaos and everything from legal stuff to street riots to just the Democrats going about election deniers. You wait and see who the real election deniers are if Trump wins this. They'll be doing every legal maneuver, every trick in the book you can imagine. And that will just, you know, people are already wound up now. They're just going to provoke people like crazy.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I know what I'm getting just from down here and looking at all of this going on is I can't help but getting a bit of deja vu, a whiff of 2016 about the whole election race. Do you feel that?
Yeah, I think so. You know, this is, you know, it was Trump versus Hillary, Trump versus Kamala. This is going the same way again. Everybody's on 10. It's just that the ante has been upped, but it's very much a similar dynamic. And so we've had a lot of shenanigans between, you know, Hillary's time and now, and a lot of people have come to understand the depth of corruption in the government way beyond what they understood when Hillary was running. And this is widespread now. You don't get a lot of pushback when you talk about this kind of thing, even in just moderate audiences.
Now, I'm really intrigued that you've mentioned moderate audiences, because as the whole campaign has now started to unfold, you've had the palace coup and Kamala has been installed. With Robert F. Kennedy Jr. sort of kind of doing an endorsement of Trump, like he's dropped out of the race, where does an undecided voter go, Trevor, and what does an undecided voter look like right now?
Look, I think there are, if you're an undecided voter now, you're paying no attention and probably won't vote. I would guess the undecided voter is way less than 2 or 3% now. You know,
really?
You've made up your mind now, you're going to vote Democrat or you're going to vote Green or you're going to vote Republican for Trump. The days of the old swing voter are long gone, I think. Every election it gets tighter, less and less undecided. So this is a much more polarized electorate now. The undecided swing voter probably isn't going to vote. You haven't made up your mind by now, you're not going to vote.
Because I do wonder whether or not, because in the United Kingdom, for example, you had reform come in as a spoiler, but what they didn't predict was the exceptionally poor turnout, and actually the most powerful voting bloc was the one that stayed at home and didn't
absolutely
go out at all. So will
Labour got a landslide, but they got less votes than they did last time.
Exactly.
Because the vote was so down, especially for the Conservatives, well deservedly so, that Labour just with a split vote and everything, Labour just got a landslide with a pathetic vote.
So what sort of danger then do you have, and who would be most at risk by this, for that apathetic voter, that one that really isn't tapped in, isn't interested, and are so disengaged with everything that they also are so disengaged that they won't even go out and vote. That voter bloc, who will that impact more, the Republicans or the Democrats?
I think it will impact the Republicans more because a large proportion of the American Christian vote is in that camp. A large proportion. You know, less than 50% of Christians in America are registered to vote, and about half of those actually do vote. If they voted in even normal proportions, and they tended to vote conservative, Republicans would hands down every time. But yeah, it's there's been a real program to try and get Christians to stay home this time. The Democrats are really focused on that. And some of your more naive pastors have bought into it. You know, President Trump's not really the most godly man that they want on earth. And so therefore it's better to have a communist, you know, to teach people a lesson.
Oh, the irony.
Seriously.
Really?
That's what they think. And if we lose, and I think the Republicans will win. I think Trump will win at least the election. But what happens after that is different. I think he will win, but if he loses, it will be because of the lazy Christians and cowardly Christians who put a virtuous veneer on their cowardice and irresponsibility. That's how I'm going to say it.
I had a question here, but you've actually pretty much answered it. I said Kamala, is she a Marxist or a moron or all of the above? And I think we've covered off definitely Marxist.
Because he's a Marxist with moronic tendencies.
You know, you like to research and scratch below the surface. She's not come to this as a first generation, well, this is a wonderful new idea that I learned in college.
No, I know.
This is ingrained in her, is it not?
Look, I've got a book coming out in a few days. It's called Stealth, Kamala Harris's Communist Roots. And it's going to be available worldwide on Amazon. If you ever meet a communist in life, and not most people haven't, they become communists in university. They get some Marxist professors, they get all fired up about Palestine or something, and they become communists. She was a communist from the cradle. She's never been anything but a communist. She was going to a communist social club in elementary school, primary school, called the Rainbow Dream. They had Marxist poets every Thursday night, you know. Her father was an affirmative action Marxist. Stanford University didn't have enough Marxists in its economics department at the time, so they recruited the best Marxists they could find. They mounted a campaign to recruit the best Marxist. And her mother, Shia Mala Gopalan, is a hardcore Marxist as well. Both were part of a group called the Afro-American Association, which was the group that spawned the Black Panther Party, which a lot of people don't understand. That was a pro-China, pro-North Korea Marxist Maoist group. People think it's just a black nationalist group. No, it was Maoist. And her parents were part of the group that sprang from. She has been involved with Marxists since she was 6 months old to now. The Maoists who came to the movement in the 60s and who are now running the Democratic Party and a lot of Hollywood and most of the labor unions and that sort of thing in America, that's her people. Street-level Maoists, Maoists who went into business, Maoists who went to the leadership of the Democratic Party. She is completely part of that movement. She would be nothing without that movement, nothing at all.
She is someone who has appeared to have fallen upwards and certainly slipped away to political ascendancy. So being tapped in, Trevor, as I know you are, to, you know, the whole social element of the world, the whole diddy-diddy-dum-dum situation, and she was pretty tight with the didster back in the day. Will this stick to her like they tried to stick Epstein with Trump, or are they all as currently the Hollywood and media elite running for cover with this whole P. Diddy scheme?
Yeah, well, see, you know, they tried to hang Epstein around Trump's neck because that's the left-wing narrative and they'll drive that. No, I think she'll be pretty much insulated from this. You know, there won't be any court cases till after the election. She'll be protected. The media is protecting her every step of the way. So they won't let something like that be hung around her neck. Some of the people around her are the most corrupt and vile people you could possibly imagine. You know, the Podestas and types like that. but it's not going to be allowed to do it unless Trump makes a big issue of it somehow. But I think they'd be scared of the backlash amongst women voters. I don't think they will go there on that. But Trump's full of surprises, you never know. But I don't think it would be a very profitable way to go. There's more than enough to concentrate on her connections and her policies to scare the hell out of people if you really focus in on them.
Which is what was so disappointing about the debate. Like, she was obviously prepared within an inch of her life. There was sort of hints of collusion between moderators and the questions and how they handled, you know, thank you, Madam Vice President, to we need to move on to the next question, Mr. Trump, you know, like that, and in terms of how they handled it. They were very clever, whoever prepared, because she obviously didn't do it. They were very, very clever in their preparation to bait bear traps that they knew Donald Trump would fall into. And he did.
Yeah. Because policy. That was Trump's finest moment at all. He was not prepared because I think he'd had such an easy time with Biden. And I think he believed, you know, I believe Kamala is pretty stupid, but he's got to understand that the people around her are very skilled operatives and they baited traps for him and a whole bunch of things he could have hammered her on. He just walked right past because she got him a bit rattled. He just looked grumpy through the whole thing, not as usually smiling self. And that's his fault, you know, he's to blame for that. She's not going to appear at the Al Smith dinner, which is a traditional roast type dinner. It's a charity dinner that every Republican and Democrat candidate attends it. She's not going to appear at that because she knows that's more ad lib. That's more to and fro. She couldn't be prepared very well for that. That's the dinner. A few years ago, a friend of mine, Evan Sayat, wrote the lines for Trump. He said, his joke was, I bumped into Hillary Clinton on the stairway. She said, pardon me. I said, I might. that was the Al Smith dinner in 2016, I believe.
That was Trevor Loudon. And as Trevor mentioned, his new book on Kamala Harris is out now, called Stealth, Kamala Harris's Communist Roots. Up next is Kevin Sorbo, conservative Christian actor and producer, and best known here as Hercules. Whilst much of our conversation was on entertainment, I know Kevin keeps a very keen eye on politics, so I just couldn't help myself and I had to get his take on the upcoming election. Here's what he had to say. Are you seeing a pivot now? I mean, look, we are now into October. Next month, the big show is on. Yep. Are you seeing a pivot in the mood from 2016 to 2020 to 2024? What have you seen?
People are there is a tipping point. There's no question. People are starting to wake up. Lions are starting to wake up. The sheep are going to be the sheep. But more and more people are vocalizing. Because the last 4 years of this government, which is a total hardcore socialist government, mm-hmm. to let 20 million people, what is the population of New Zealand? 5 million?
Five and a half million.
We let 20 million people in this country come across the border. In the 4 years Trump was in office, it was below 4 million for the whole 4 years. This is five times as many people. They've already estimated 800,000 of these people are terrorists. They admit to the fact that they're now in America. I think we're going to have a 9/11 scale in every city sometime in the next 2 to 5 years. They're planning. They're very patient about it. We're going to have something horrific happen to this country because of these people coming in. The amount of people getting attacked, raped, murdered from illegals, 475,000 reported attacks already. 475,000. What we're doing to this country is on beyond evil, what our government's doing. And it seems to be, obviously, it's on purpose. And you're looking at Kamala Harris, who wasn't, when she ran for office 4 years ago, she had she didn't get one vote, didn't win one delegate. She didn't even make it to Iowa. She was the first of the 13 people running for the president's office against Trump in 2020. She didn't make it to Iowa. She was the first voted off by people in the Democrat Party. And what I find even more hilarious to me is that her only qualification is to be vice president, and these are Joe Biden's words, they're not mine. He said, my running mate will be a woman of color. That was her qualifications to be a woman of color. And how she got to be now the nomination, and they're painting her as this amazing person. And when we were in California, people knew about her. They called her Casting Couch Kamala because she's pretty much sleeping with everybody to work her way up the San Francisco and Sacramento political chain. So here we are. And this just proves that anybody can be president in America. That's what it proves.
When you're talking to people that you know, I mean, surely there must be those even more centrist liberals that are looking at this going with raised eyebrows, wondering what on earth is going on.
Oh, yeah. There's no question about that. I mean, I know, look, I still got liberal friends. We get along just fine. We don't harbor hate towards each other. We give each other a hard time, but it's all going to, you know, guys give each other a hard time. I sit there and watch what's going on within our political system right now. What's going on with, in terms of just the backlash? Look, when I meet people that disagree with me and I say, well, what policies of President Trump during his 4 years did you not like? And they go, well, he's a jerk. He's an asshole. And I go, well, those aren't policies. Okay. And they're running on that. And the truth is, before he announced himself as a Republican candidate, he was a registered Democrat. And everybody wanted him on their late night talk shows. They all, well, Hollywood, please do a cameo on my TV show or my movie. They all loved the guy. The minute he went down that road, they just went after him, just vilified the guy. And I love they call him a Nazi. Number one, Nazi stands for National Socialist. He's hardly a National Socialist to begin with. And they use that Nazi term so freely, it doesn't make any sense. But if you ask people, be honest now, were you better off during those 4 years than you've been the last 4 years? And if they are honest, of course they were. We were energy independent. We were doing our own oil. This whole climate hustle, climate warming thing is ridiculous to me. The trillions of dollars we're throwing out there. You think India or China care about what they're doing in terms of pollution? Our country now, our world right now is in dire need of not to get less carbon. We need more carbon. I saw a 450-year pattern that supposedly came out from whatever they're studying as scientists. And we're at one of the lowest peaks we've ever been right now. So to me, that's a whole other issue we can talk about. But I just think it's ridiculous. I call climate change weather. That's what it is. They're called seasons, kind of what it is. Just 10 years ago, they thought we were going to another ice age here in America because we had the coldest decade and we're like since the 1970s. So I just find it sad, this whole power and control thing happening, and people afraid. Once Biden got in office, he took away our resources of drilling oil. Well, what do? We buy oil from the Middle East. So we fund our own wars against ourselves. That's what we're doing. Yeah. We're paying countries that hate us to have oil when we got so much oil in America and up in Alaska, which is part of America, but there's so much untapped oil up there. And these people that want to get rid of oil, then maybe they need to start living the lifestyle, getting rid of their iPhones, getting rid of the computers, getting rid of a lot of their clothes, getting rid of the toothbrush, hairbrush, vacuum cleaner. There's oil in all these products. I think people are so ignorant that what oil is being used for.
Now, not everyone I've spoken to is fully on board with the Trump train. Anne Marie Waters, lawyer, activist and political candidate, sees the upcoming US election through a feminist lens. This is Anne Marie's thoughts on the upcoming election.
Just speaking of women, we are getting it from all sides. I mean, from the right, you're right. And they're becoming, I think the Overton window has shifted a little bit on the right. For misogynistic men on the right, they're now saying things they wouldn't have said a few years ago. Women shouldn't do this and women shouldn't do that. They're very brazen about it. So we've got that on the right. And by the way, I'll make a little prediction for you. If Kamala Harris wins in November, I don't like Donald Trump. I actually probably prefer her over him, frankly. But if she wins in November, and I think that she will, if she wins in November, remember I told you this, right-wing men will start saying women shouldn't be allowed to vote, and they'll be serious. And I'll be interested to see who joins in that chorus. I will be very interested to see. Because I think if she wins, and I think that she will, I think it will be women's vote that does it for her, that gets her over the line. So wait for it. Wait for it. That'll come.
Finally, I bring you James Fishback. James is the founder of Incubate Debate, and he is also an economist and financial analyst. I asked him about the financial impacts riding on the outcome of the US election, and here are some of his thoughts.
How important are these elections for actually setting the global tone for the financial stability, particularly in the Western Hemisphere. Do you have concerns?
I have huge concerns. You know, most elections, to tell you the truth, they don't matter. Most elections don't matter. Bush versus Gore. Why? Okay, there's a corporate tax rate angle, right? Romney versus Obama. Well, there's a regulation angle. This is a great reset election. Do we want to double down on the stupid policies of the past 4 years that have given us record inflation, that have given us record migration, that have spiked crime, that have contributed to the sense of helplessness and disaffection in all swaths of America? Or do we want to go back to the policies of Donald Trump, the proven track record that worked? And by the way, you may not like his tweets. You may not like the way he said things publicly. But what is an undeniable fact is that we didn't enter any new wars. We saw low inflation. And at the end of the day, prosperity was shared widely. We have never been this divided as a country since the Civil War. And I actually had, you know, when President Biden was sworn in, I'll never forget January 20th, I actually had hope that I didn't vote for him. I don't support his policies, but I actually thought that if there was one thing he could do coming out of this pandemic and the awful response to it, was I thought he could unify the country. I didn't think he was going to lean into the rhetoric that he did, calling people who voted for Donald Trump MAGA Republicans and a threat to democracy and to divide the country as much as he did. This is a great reset election. Do we want to continue down the path where we jeopardize our national security by bringing in 10,000 migrants who are unvetted every single day, who suck on resources, who are competing with American citizens for housing, and that's a very scarce resource, who in many ways, by the way, are actually being exploited by large multinational businesses who want cheap labor but don't want to pay Americans, don't want to actually have to stare down the communities that are consumers of their products and services and say, we know that you're struggling. We know that you are faced with many issues that may have left you to leave the labor force. You may be long-term unemployed. We don't want to pay to get you back on your feet and work to retrain you. We'd rather have cheap labor from Honduras and Senegal that's coming across the border. We'd rather pay them to do it. And so this is a referendum, not just on Kamala Harris and Donald Trump and conservative and liberal policy. It's a referendum on the social contract itself. To whom is the U.S. president accountable? To the American citizens or to the people who got shipped here 2 weeks ago and are now demanding tens of thousands of dollars in taxpayer-paid benefits?
In terms of the issues, there's a lot of bread and circuses. So I think the latest bread circus at the time that we're talking is about, I think, Haitians eating cats. There is a lot of crazy noise. What are for you, the top three issues that are not necessarily getting the airplay that they should because it will expose a sort of a rotten carcass of what's been going on in the last 4 years? If you were a policy advisor to Donald Trump, what would be the three things that you would say, Mr. Trump, you need to concentrate on these things and forget everything else?
You have to talk about the border. You have to talk about inflation. And you have to talk about war, global conflict. Let's talk about just inflation for one moment. It's in the middle there, but let's talk about that. You know, I went to school for economics. That was my undergraduate study, was economics. And the economic definition of inflation is the change in price level year over year. So if you go to Walmart, we go to some hypermarket, right, in New Zealand, and we spend $100 on groceries in year one. And then in year two, it's $170. And then in year three, it's still $170. Inflation in year one was 70%. Inflation in year two was 0%. That is the economic, technical definition of inflation. But the way most people think about inflation, and rightly so, is, am I paying more for the same stuff today than I was a year ago, than I was 4 years ago? And to that question, the answer is unequivocally yes. Things across the board in America are 25 to 30% more expensive. And so what Kamala Harris wants to say is that, well, actually, inflation has slowed and it's not as bad as it could have been and it's not as bad as it was. The reality is things are more expensive today than they were under Donald Trump. And I would drive that point home. I would talk about the border, which, by the way, is an issue that unites a multi-ethnic coalition of voters. It is Black and Hispanic voters, citizens of this country, who can trace their lineage back generations, who stand to lose the most from an influx of cheap labor. This is a fact. I mean, I know Donald Trump got a lot of flack for it, saying that they're going to take Black jobs. Well, let's just look at the facts. Black workers disproportionately work in leisure hospitality. They disproportionately work in restaurants. And so when you bring in cheap labor into restaurants, into leisure and hospitality, into hotel settings, you are pushing out Black workers who are citizens, who have paid their taxes, who have children that they're raising in these communities, have called America home for distant generations. That is wrong. That is un-American. And that is not just insulting to those who voted for Donald Trump this election or the past one. That is insulting to everyone, Republican, Democrat, Independent. I think 90% of voters would be rightly furious by, are rightly furious by what's happening at the southern border. And so if I'm Donald Trump, I'm talking about the economy, I'm talking about inflation, and I'm talking about the border. Those are the issues that, one, are the most real for voters, the most wide-reaching for voters, and that both Democrats and Republicans care about them. And third, are issues that Kamala Harris has specifically failed on. President Biden made her the border czar. New York Times said it at the time. Axios said it at the time. And once again, they're trying to rewrite history with their unabashed gaslighting. And so she was put in charge of the southern border. She accepts that. And it's time to look at her track record. It is awful.
I hope you really enjoyed my roundup of recent guests with their thoughts on next week's US election. You can hear more on RCR with the Political Agenda on Friday morning, and we'll take a look at how the election is tracking just a handful of days out. This election is significant for us on so many levels. I can't emphasise that enough. Political, cultural, financial, and as is often says, if the US sneezes, we catch cold. I believe we have had a COVID-sized case of the flu with the current administration, so I personally will be watching this result very, very closely. If you've got any comments about what you've just heard this morning, drop us a line. 2057 is the text number, or inbox@realitycheck.radio is the email.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.